Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday, April 10th, 2020. Midland Memorial Hospital Chief, worst of pandemic may end soon. Wilson, we only get through this fine if we keep everyone safe from the virus. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. Are we through the worst of the worst when it comes to coronavirus in Midland? It remains too early to say, but Midland Memorial Hospital Chief Medical Officer Dr. Larry Wilson said Thursday during a Unified Command team meeting that there are computer models that show we may be through the worst of the pandemic before the end or around the end of April. Wilson, who's been among the most vocal, if not the most, about the need for Midland County residents to practice social distancing and other best practices to stop the spreading of the virus, said it is possible for that to occur, but only if residents stay the course. There are 30 confirmed cases of coronavirus, COVID-19, in Midland County as of Thursday morning. Of those, 14 have completed isolation and 8 have recovered, according to the Midland Health Department. Becky Smith of the Health Department defined recovered as a confirmed case who is to the point where they have been cleared to return to normal daily activities, including being in a work setting. The Midland Health Department also reported Thursday that 13 confirmed cases are in isolation status at home, and 2 others are in isolation status at Midland Memorial Hospital. Wilson said if Midland County residents continue to show a seriousness about social distancing, he can envision a process where restrictions are lifted and the community can do things to get the economy moving again. Governor Greg Abbott announced an executive order in March that limits social gatherings to 10 people, prohibits eating and drinking at restaurants and bars while still allowing takeout, closes gyms, bans people from visiting nursing homes except for critical care, and temporarily closes schools. We have to lift restrictions and go about old routines carefully, Wilson said. We can't jump with both feet or we'll ramp this thing right back up again. Again, this is a very transmissible virus that remains in the community. And the reason we're seeing such a flattening of the curve here is because of all the things that you all, the people in the community, have done. So I want to say thank you, but I also want you to remain calm. Wilson also addressed the social media chatter that the response to coronavirus has been overblown and that too much attention has been given to daily count in order to drum up fear about the virus. He said the more than 2,000 deaths across the United States on Wednesday was very sobering, and that he hopes the most severe day in terms of mortalities across the county give us all pause and recognition of how serious COVID-19 is. He also said that there has been a doubling of the number of cases in Midland County within the last week or so. That should serve to remind us that asymptomatic people are carrying the virus and that people before they become sick for a day or two might be carrying the virus as well. I think everyone has seen what has happened in areas that were more cavalier about their approach to this virus, Wilson said. The reason that we have been able to bend the curve down and make this seem like an overreaction is because we kept it away pretty effectively from the vulnerable population. So I think you might recall that over the last couple of weeks, you've heard myself say, the mayor saying, and Midland Health CEO Russell Myers say as well, that we all hope that we're going to reach a day when we'll look back at the COVID-19 reaction and say, we didn't need to do all of those things. But the only reason we'll be able to say that is because we did all those things, and we protected everybody from this virus. We only will get through it fine if we keep everyone safe from the virus. MISD mulls two options for graduation, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. Midland ISD leaders are looking at options for graduation that include a formal procession and virtual graduation. MISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick said Thursday that variables include the health concerns with putting thousands of people inside Chaparral Center at the end of May or another time. Midland ISD has shut down its facilities for classroom education since after the district's spring break vacation. Governor Greg Abbott has extended school closures until at least May 4th. The Odessa American has reported that Superintendent Scott Murray has stated that ECISD students likely will not graduate in the traditional sense. Midland College and Odessa College have canceled graduation ceremonies. Riddick said Thursday the district will look at formal ceremonies and a time frame for the ceremonies. Currently, graduation ceremonies are set for May 23rd. He also said the district is looking at what a virtual graduation looks like and how can we provide this opportunity for our community to still have this experience, but it's not done in the arena. It's done in a very unusual sense, which would be a virtual graduation. So we have those two plans that are working themselves out, Riddick said. The superintendent also used the meeting to promote a web page for Midland ISD seniors, https://bit.ly/2k5kzib. That's /2K5Z iB. The page allows seniors to look at information about commencement, AP testing, STAR end of course impact, credit recovery, grade point average, and transcripts. Local news. When crisis ends, continue to act with kindness and compassion. From Mark Detman, Midland Police Department Chaplain. During this unprecedented time in our history, questions about God are ever present in our minds. Where is God during this pandemic? What is God trying to tell us? Will God save us from this dreadfulness? These are legitimate questions, and God wants us to talk to Him about these things. He wants us to study His Word and grow closer to Him. God loves us. We are His children, and He gave us of Himself because of His love for us. John 3:16 tells us that, "For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whoever believes in Him should not perish but have everlasting life." And He is always with us at this crucial time in history as well as every day of our lives. Jesus reminds us in Hebrews 13:5 that "I will never leave you or forsake you," and that's a promise we can rely on. Jesus saved me from a terrible time in my life many years ago, as He has many others, and I continue to see His presence every day. My wife's favorite flower is the snapdragon, and I plant some for her every fall because it's very rare for them to survive from one year to the next. However, in the past few days, we've been greeted with beautiful yellow and red snapdragons reappearing from their winter slumber. I see God's presence in those snapdragons and His promise that He is with us and that He'll see us through this crisis. Look around and you'll find His presence and His promise in so many unexpected places. As for what God is telling us, it's the same message that He has told us for millennia. Before He left this earth for His heavenly kingdom, Jesus told His disciples, and each one of us, "I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you should also love one another." That's our commandment for life, and we're seeing it throughout Midland during this crisis. Our neighbors are going shopping for those who can't get out of their homes. People are gathering outside to visit with one another at safe distances. Our health professionals, our first responders, and all of our essential workers, grocery workers, delivery personnel, repairmen, just to name a few, are going above and beyond. That's what our Father wants of each of His children. He wants us to love one another, to help one another, to be kind to our brothers and sisters. When this crisis passes, and it will, let's continue to act with kindness, love, and compassion toward one another. Let's continue to love each other like Jesus loves us. Odessa HEB employee tests positive for COVID-19 by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. An employee at the HEB location on University Boulevard in West Odessa has tested positive for COVID-19, a representative confirmed Thursday. In a statement to the Reporter Telegram, HEB's West Texas representative said the employee last worked at the store on March 31st. At impacted locations, all directly affected partners are notified and provided medical advice. Each location is deep cleaned and sanitized multiple times, she said in the statement. Within 24 hours of the store being informed, customers can visit their store's website to see when an affected partner last worked in their store. A notice on the store location page for the University Boulevard store indicates that an employee there has tested positive. No other stores in Odessa or Midland have similar alerts indicating an employee has been confirmed to have COVID-19. Employees in San Antonio, Houston, and Austin have also tested positive for the virus. The West Texas representative declined to be interviewed about measures the company is taking to protect employees and the protocol when an employee tests positive, saying, "This is the response we are giving, and we will not do interviews regarding positive cases." A press release from HEB states the company began providing masks and gloves to employees on Saturday. Employees are encouraged to wear the protective equipment, but not required. While we understand the use of masks does not fully prevent the transmission of coronavirus, we are taking every precaution to ensure our partners feel comfortable while serving our customers. HEB has also installed plexiglass partitions at all checkout counters to enhance social distancing between patrons and cashiers. Additionally, we conduct deep cleaning and sanitizing of stores and hard surfaces, as well as fuel stations throughout the day, and utilize contactless home delivery to limit direct interaction. We require our partners to stay home if they feel ill. Peyton. Pelosi, Schumer doing everything they can to destroy West Texas. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton said Thursday the Midlanders should spend a little time over the next days fighting for West Texas politically. He said during a conference call with local media that Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi and Senator Chuck Schumer, both Democrats, are doing everything they can to destroy West Texas. He made the statement one day after communicating with representatives in Washington and with the Department of Energy about the current state of the oil industry. I am wanting to tell you very clearly that our Texas delegation, whether it's Senator John Cornyn or U.S. Representative Mike Conaway or Senator Ted Cruz, need your support. They need us writing them, they need us emailing them, and defending the oil and gas industry. I want you to just make no mistake about it, as I have been on the phone with people in Washington and through the bureaucratic channels, that it is absolutely, and this is probably more political than this time needs to be, but Pelosi and Schumer are doing everything they can to destroy West Texas. Payton said Washington leaders need the support of those in the region so they have the courage to stand up against what's happening in Saudi Arabia and Russia. Both members of OPEC Plus have been in the energy conflict of sorts that has threatened to flood the market with oil, driving down the price and impacting the region, which is so dependent on the industry. There are many things we can do to continue to make our voice heard, especially if you're sitting at home, Payton said. And you're probably not putting in an 8-hour workday, and so take a minute to email your congressional delegation and make sure that they put Americans first. And we can continue to elevate that discussion right here in Midland, as I continue to push into that issue as well as the state and federal levels. County introduces CHAT, C-H-A-T, to track coronavirus cases, from staff reports. Midland County Judge Terry Johnson and Emergency Management Coordinator Justin Bunch announced Thursday a new tool that they believe can help slow the spread of the coronavirus. CHAT, C-H-A-T, Community Health Assessment Tool, is designed to gauge changes in the general health of the community during the COVID-19 pandemic. One of the struggles we have in Midland County and all around the country is determining how many people may have the virus, Johnson said in a press release. The limited availability of tests means we are making decisions without the whole picture. We created this system because we need more information from the public. Johnson said Thursday he has engaged with former Midland City Councilman John James to help with the county's strategic planning this year, and in doing so, this project of mine came out. To participate, text the word CHAT, C-H-A-T, to the phone numbers 432-287-7337, according to the release. Then three questions will be asked to establish baseline information. 1. What is your zip code? 2. What is your age range? 3. Do you have any of the following symptoms? Fever, dry cough, or shortness of breath? Reply Y or N. Then every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday thereafter, CHAT will send question number 3 to get an update on how the participant is feeling. By viewing the information over time, public policymakers will get a clearer picture of the community's health by which to make decisions. And because it's a text, the information is provided anonymously. Imagine this scenario, Bunch said in the press release. The CHAT trend suggests an increase in symptoms throughout the county. With that simple data point, we know our hospital may see a surge in patients. That surge will mean more beds, PPE, and respirators. We just bought time to acquire that equipment and potentially save lives. I am convinced this information will help us save lives. We could have spent a month building an app, weeks building a website, hoping that everyone had internet access. Or we could build a system based on the fastest and most widely used communication form today. That's why we chose texting, Johnson said in the release. If people participate, and we strongly encourage them to do so, It will help us slow the spread and save lives. Obituaries and death notices. Joe Jody McGee, 85, of Lubbock, passed away April 2nd. She was born October 18, 1934, in Lamesa. She lived and worked as a hairdresser in the Lubbock area until 1980, when she moved to the Midland-Odessa area, where she became an electrologist and started advanced electrolysis. She moved back to Lubbock in 2012. Graveside services were held on Monday in the Idaloo Cemetery. For more information on Jody's life, please visit www.sandersfuneralhome.com. Christopher Chris Tobar, 42, of Midland, passed away on Wednesday, April 8th. A viewing will be from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. Friday, April 10th, at Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, April 11th, at Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home Chapel. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Services are limited to family, so a live stream of the service will be available at 11 a.m. on Saturday at www.livestream.com/NPW. Chris is survived by his wife, Elena Tobar, children Alex, Glacius, and Mercedes. Deanna Almager, 26, of Stanton, passed away April 8th, surrounded by her loving family. Visitation will be held Thursday, April 9th, from 11 to 9 p.m., with a rosary reciting at 7 p.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Chapel service will be held Friday, April 10th, at 11 a.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Interment will follow at St. Joseph's Catholic Cemetery. Survivors include her mother, Anna, father, David, and brother, Dominic. Arrangements were under the direction of Stanton Memorial Funeral Home and Chapel.
Hi, this is Linda, reading the Odessa American for Friday, April 10th. Section A. Pop-up classrooms. Teachers adjusting to virtual pre-K by Ruth Campbell. Like teachers across Ector County ISD, those at Carver Early Education Center have had to adapt to a brave new world of remote teaching and learning. Some of them have had to juggle their profession with homeschooling their own children. At Carver, they have coined the phrase pop-up classrooms, which Principal Sherry Palmer said means a classroom where it's needed. Some teachers have set up at their kitchen or dining room table, and others in a closet or laundry room. Of course, it is not the same as you would anticipate in a classroom because they're not sitting right in front of you, but our teachers have to use everything from an application called Seesaw, where they can give live instruction with the kids watching and can even respond to them. We have some teachers who in the past have even created Zoom classrooms with a few kids so that they can see one another and hear one another. That is really cute. The thing you couldn't control, they were so excited to see one another, Palmer said. Although teachers can't have that face-to-face interaction with students, they created relationships with those students and their families before COVID-19 hit, which Palmer said has been helpful. She noted that in the past few weeks, the school has been able to contact all but a few of the 535 students who attend. The school also has been able to reach into some homes at a level they might not have otherwise if it weren't for the pandemic. I have to say, one of the positive things that has happened is some of those families that we had sort of minimum relationship with have really fostered and bloomed, and we've been able to nurture it in a different way because some of our families are beginning to understand the work that we did with their children. now that it's happening through pop-up classrooms and packets that we might send home, parents are beginning to understand the job is big and that they weren't just sending their kids off to 3 hours of daycare, but they were sending them off to 3 hours of quality instruction, Palmer said. She added that they are beginning to see some parents who are quite talented as teachers. Packets were sent home for parents, in addition to manipulatives, scissors, glue, crayons, and markers. Activities are also sent to parents where students can use manipulatives they can find around the house. Then the week after that, we started mailing out packets for two reasons. Number one, as we began to social distance more and more and try to really protect one another, we decided that rather than parents driving through, that we would mail packets. Not only that, sometimes with the loss of jobs that we had, it's becoming more and more intense. Some parents might not have the gasoline to run in and pick up packets. So we just decided, for community spread and for convenience of our parents, that we would start mailing those packets. Those packets, yeah, they're paper, but they have activities that kids color and glue and cut and work on their scissor skills, as well as other kinds of skills that we know are really important right now, Palmer said. To show evidence that the children have completed their assignment, parents are asked to snap a picture of the work and send it to the teachers. That's another creative way we've tried to bridge the gap between the classroom in the school building and those pop-up classrooms, Palmer said. At first, Palmer said, the virtual classrooms were overwhelming as teachers tried to recreate the same passion and intensity as they would have live. But with each passing week, we're getting better at it, and the kids and the parents are getting better at it too, Palmer said. General education pre-kindergarten teacher Lori Evans, special education co-teacher Dion Paquette, and Maria Cabrera, bilingual teacher for dual language, never thought they would find themselves teaching pre-kindergarten in this way. Luckily, Evans said she redid a room in her house at Thanksgiving and cleaned out a closet. She put a little desk in it where she was going to do her lesson planning, and that's where she has her class. Evans said her soon-to-be 2-year-old son has popped up in a video. I do not have a way to see them while I am teaching them. I have asked my parents if they were interested in Zoom, and I haven't gotten a whole lot of response. I think maybe 3 parents have been interested in it, so I have not suggested that we do a Zoom meet so the kids can see each other. But I used the Seesaw platform so my kids are able to send short videos of themselves. I send videos to them all the time. That's how I'm doing my teaching. I can do voice messages on there, Evans said. She added that teaching this way is unprecedented for her. It's definitely out of my comfort zone. I even wrote a note to my parents when we began, and I let them know. I said, parents, please give me some grace. I'm used to being a complete goofball in front of your children, and I'm totally fine with that, but I'm nervous as all get out trying to be goofy in front of you guys, knowing that you're watching it. So please take me with a grain of salt, Evans said. She said this will hopefully give her students a sense of normalcy during this time. Paquette is working out of her den. She tried to bring as many items home as she could to make her den look like a classroom that was so familiar to her students. With general and special education children in her class, Paquette said she posts something for everyone and then goes back to make something harder for a child who needs more enrichment. Or I'll do something and I can just assign it to a few children that maybe need it a different way, she said. I've talked to all the parents and I've given the parents ideas on how to make the lesson fit their child. Cabrera is teaching from her dining room. She gets what she needs, brings it home, and then takes it back because she doesn't have room for it at home. In addition, she's had to adjust to the technology as other teachers, parents, and children have. Cabrera has 2 young children herself. that she is homeschooling. It's an adjustment period for all of us, so we have to teach them how to work all the apps and technology that their teachers are using, she said. The district technology department can help the teachers, so the teachers can help the parents. Palmer gave a big shout out to ECISD because the technology was quickly put in place. It's a lot different than what we're used to, but we're making do. It's getting better and better, Cabrera said. She has discovered that Facebook Live lets her record herself for the time she needs, but she cannot see her students. It's kind of difficult to find a platform that would let me upload videos of myself for long periods. There are a lot of apps for educators that you can choose from, but they limit you on the video length, and so that's been a little challenging. So I started using Facebook, and it's worked well for me. It has the Facebook Live option, and also you can record yourself with pretty long videos, and it will upload them. That's kind of helped me teach my lessons, as well as stay in touch with my students, my parents, and record them. It's something that most of my parents are familiar with. Everyone pretty much has that, except for a small group, Cabrera said. She does miss seeing her students live. I'm kind of talking, and there's nobody there to talk to me back the way we're used to, so that's what I miss, she said. She also misses the children's interactions and the stories they tell. A positive is that her parents will comment on other students' work and get ideas from each other. Cabrera said she also gets ideas from parents. It's opened up a whole new world because they're watching everyone trying to teach their own child. Parents will upload videos on how they taught, and everyone gets to watch if they're sharing them on our group. That's been really nice. I think that's a big plus to everyone. Everyone learns from it, including myself, she added. Stay Home for the Holiday by Michael Merlot. As coronavirus cases rise in Ector County, hospital officials urge Odessans to stay home for Easter weekend. During Thursday's virtual hospital press conference, Medical Center Hospital, who usually records the press conferences and posts them live on Facebook, was unable to do so due to technical issues. Ector County Health Department Director Brandy Garcia reported that the county has 39 positive cases, 266 negative cases, 92 pending, 9 recovered, and 1 death. Garcia said that they will now be adding numbers of those recovered from the virus to the Ector County Health Department website. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin reported that MCH has 22 positives, 5 positive cases in the hospital, 4 in CCU who are on ventilators, and 1 on another coronavirus-designated floor. He said MCH has 119 negatives, 10 persons under investigation at the hospital, 4 in CCU, 5 on another COVID-19 designated floor, and 1 in the pediatric unit. Tippin added, all of our other positives are at home, discharged, and are recovering at home, so that's good news. Odessa Regional Medical Center Hospital President Stacy Brown reported that ORMC has tested 103, 9 of whom are positive, 77 negative, 4 persons under investigation, 2 confirmed, and another person on a ventilator. ORMC Chief Medical Officer Rohith Saravanan said that his only advice would be to stay home. Home is the best place for the holidays, and that can't be more true for this holiday. I encourage everyone to stay home and not congregate in places, he said. He urged that people keep following CDC guidelines for social distancing, and if people plan to travel internationally for the holidays, then they should quarantine for 14 days upon returning home per CDC recommendations. He said that the CDC recommends that people avoid all non-essential international travel at this time. Garcia said that as the EOC team is filling up space at the Southside Senior Center, they are looking for other options to make sure they are social distancing, as well as considering how their investigators and tracers can work from home. County Commissioner Dale Childers said that the EOC is comprised of Ector County employees, city employees, as well as nursing students from UTPB. Typically right now, he said, it's mostly city and county, but we're looking towards expanding because as we expand the number of cases, we're going to have a lot more people doing tracing. Childers said that they are in contact with UTPB and Texas Tech, and that the EOC is considering doing a lot more virtually. Childers said they are planning to look at doing a testing spot at the Coliseum in the future, and said they didn't know all of the details yet, but that they would look to UTPB and Texas Tech for staffing, because the hospitals are under stress staffing their own situations. He said that the EOC is still not sure if they can do it, but they are looking at the many facets to be able to do a testing site. As far as enforcing a shelter in place, Childers said that, I know that the sheriff has been, and I think that the police department has been looking at some locations that are blatantly violating that rule. But for social distancing, they are relying on the public following those rules, whether it be the 6-foot rule or wearing masks. Garcia said that the EOC has 3 or 4 lead investigators investigating positive COVID-19 patients and tracers under each one to investigate the household spread, workplace spread, and other locations where the positive case may have exposed others to the virus. She said that they have a little over 20 people and are training 5 currently and will continue to train people to help. District Figuring Out Grade Policy by Ruth Campbell. Student grades are still being figured out for the end of the year, but Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray is determined to do what's best for scholars. The district also is participating in a statewide marketing campaign promoting social distancing. ECISD police are conducting welfare checks to reach students and families that they haven't been able to find, and Murray announced that weekend meals are back, at least for now. We're working on that guidance, and there's a lot of factors, especially at the high school level, Murray said in a phone interview Wednesday. The NCAA has some regulations and rules in place as it relates to pass-fail. We're waiting on some guidance from the NCAA to see if they will be changing their rules and regulations. At the end of the day, we do not want to put any of our students, elementary, middle, or high school, in jeopardy because the district is making a decision that would not benefit them. So the grading choices and decisions that we make and we roll out to our schools and to our families and kids will benefit our students. So that's why we're waiting on a little bit of additional guidance from not only the state, but also the NCAA and our UIL as well. Another complexity of high school is the top 10 students. Murray said there are significant things we have to think about as we roll out a decision as far as grading is concerned. We've given guidance to our teachers and principals already about the collection of grades and daily grading, but it's really the promotion retention scenario that is a challenge right now, so we're working through it. We've got a good team of people. School districts across the state are exchanging ideas and thoughts, and so collectively we'll put a decision in place that, again, will benefit the kids in ECISD. In no way do we want to cause harm to any of our children because of the situation, so we'll work out a solution that our kids will be happy with, Murray added. Weekend meals are back in ECISD. Thursday, parents and students were able to pick up meals for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The district is closed today for Good Friday. The ECISD police has been conducting home visits or welfare checks on students that the district has been unable to reach despite multiple calls and emails. So we've asked our police officers to do those home visits, and they've conducted over 400 of those home visits thus far, Miri said. And we've had some pretty good interaction. We've reconnected with some of our kids, and we've also recognized that some of our kids, their families have moved or found a different place to live, either in the community or outside the community. So I commend our police officers for doing that, and that has helped us reconnect again with quite a few of our kids. He said he didn't have a good number of how many students fit into that category. Valid phone numbers are a stumbling block. Some of these situations are they've changed their phone number or email address or something is different and they did not notify their child's school, Muri said. This has helped us to get that new information. Phone numbers change frequently with some of our families, and that we also recognize. Other families move because of jobs or other opportunities on a fairly regular basis. Many times the schools are not kept up to date on that contact information. It's pretty important. If we had a child at school who had an emergency, we want to make sure that we're able to reach out to the parents. So having updated, accurate information is pretty critical. This process has certainly helped us get the latest information on each of our kids, Miri said. ECISD, along with the Texas Education Agency, is participating in a marketing campaign to encourage appropriate behavior during the COVID-19 pandemic. Miri said the slogan is, "Apart, we stand together." We are partnering with TEA in this Apart, we stand together campaign to encourage our students, our families, and our entire community to exercise healthy social distancing for the next several months until we make it through this crisis. You'll be seeing on many of our social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, on all of our social media opportunities, we'll be using this hashtag, this slogan, and then sharing the information from TEA, Miri said. He said he expected the governor's office either Thursday or Friday to release some new guidance about emergency child care opportunities. We had a good conversation with those folks today and a lot of work happening at the state level, so we can do work at the local level. So no specific date as to when we will open, but we were able to take some steps forward today because of the guidance that we received, Miri said. COVID-19 news. By the numbers, Ector County confirmed cases 39. Ector County negative, 266 out of 397 tested with 92 pending, one death. Midland County, 31 confirmed out of 733 tested, one death. Texas, 10,230 confirmed with 106,134 tested. Total Texas deaths, 199. U.S. cases, 427,460 total confirmed and 14,696 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. PPE fundraiser. Odessa's Bubba's 33 is hosting an all-day fundraiser from noon to 8 p.m. Wednesday to benefit local hospitals. The restaurant will donate 10% of all to-go sales to local hospitals to purchase additional PPE for healthcare workers. The restaurant is located at 6153 East Highway 191 and serves up a variety of menu options. visit www.bubbas33.com. ACUD response. State Representative Brooks Landgraf joined members of the ECUD, Ector County Utility District, on a conference call Wednesday to discuss the local and statewide response to COVID-19 and answer questions from board members. "I want to support ECUD and their efforts any way I can," Landgraf said in a news release. "Meeting the water infrastructure needs for the people and businesses in West Odessa is always necessary, but it is of even greater importance during these uncertain times." Quick hits. Go online for help. Overeaters Anonymous has scheduled online meetings, phone meetings, and non-real-time meetings from 6 to 7 p.m. Mondays and 6 to 7 p.m. Thursdays at oa.org/find-a-meeting/?type-0. The meetings are free and open to the public. Call 553-1031. COVID-19 has brought uncertain times to the Permian Basin, and the Medical Center Health System Foundation is doing everything they can to take care of the community. To help, donate to the MCHSF. Visit mchodessa.com/mchs-foundation or donate at facebook.com/mchs-foundation. UTPB nursing students start training with Health Department. The University of Texas Permian Basin College of Nursing began training April 9th with the Ector County Health Department, helping in the fight against COVID-19. Students will soon be calling people who might have come in contact with someone who tested positive for the coronavirus, tracking the illness and guiding them on the next steps to take. "As the dean, I am extremely proud that our students and faculty are both willing and excited to provide their assistance during this community crisis. We believe serving the citizens of the Permian Basin is a privilege and part of our calling as nurses and future nurses," said Donna Buick, UTPB College of Nursing Dean. The College of Nursing volunteered to assist after a call for help from Ector County. After the 22 fourth semester students are trained, 17 third semester students will follow suit. "The students are ready to do what they can to help our community stay healthy," and Buick credits her teaching team for the success of this project, a news release said. "I'm so honored to work alongside Dr. Minerva Gonzalez and Dr. Diana Ruiz on this critical project for our community. These two leaders in the College of Nursing are dedicated to the health and welfare of our community," the dean said in a release. Local news roundup. Stonegate Fellowship Odessa offers virtual Easter egg hunt. Stonegate Fellowship Odessa is hosting a virtual Easter egg hunt that is open to the public. The website for the virtual Easter egg hunt can be found at tinyurl.com/WM505U8. The contest is open from Thursday until midnight Easter Sunday. Prizes are awarded in the age-based competition. Philanthropist and attorney bring social distance Easter egg hunts to Kermit. Hundreds of needy Kermit children will get to wake up Easter morning to their very own Easter egg hunt in their yards. Texas philanthropist and attorney Cesar Ormelas announced that he would donate Easter eggs and candy to 200 needy Kermit children Sunday by hiding the eggs in their front yards very early Easter morning. Ornelas grew up in very humble beginnings and is committed to helping children and families in need across Texas New Mexico, and Mexico. While our families are doing our part to combat the spread of coronavirus by staying home and social distancing, I wanted to bring some hope and joy to 200 children in Kermit Easter morning with their very own social distancing Easter egg hunts, Ornella said in a news release. These are troubling times, so it's important to help our children still enjoy some normalcy, especially on the holiest day of the year for millions of Americans. Volunteers and myself will sanitarily hide the eggs and gifts very early Easter morning so that children can wake up and hunt for eggs in their very own yards, keeping them and their families safe. On the net, OINGURYlaw.com. Odessa College closed for Good Friday and Easter holidays. In observance of Good Friday and the Easter holidays, the Odessa College main campus and extension sites will be closed from April 10th to April 12th. On the net, odessa.edu. Police arrest man for coughing toward store employees. A 35-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly coughed toward five employees at a phone store in East Odessa. Michael Ray Akins was charged with five counts of terroristic threat, a Class B misdemeanor. The reported threat happened Monday at the Verizon Wireless, 4041 East 42nd Street, an Odessa Police Department press release detailed. The complainant reportedly told OPD that due to the COVID-19 pandemic, Verizon was taking a proactive approach by restricting customer access to the business. Akins became irate and proceeded to cough toward five employees and stated, "I hope you all get sick," before fleeing the scene in his truck. Akins was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He had five bonds totaling $5,000 and posted bail Thursday, jail records show. ORMC nurses respond to call for help in Boston. Five Odessa Regional Medical Center ORMC nurses have volunteered to travel to Boston Friday afternoon to help other Steward health care hospitals that are on the front lines of the coronavirus pandemic. A send-off took place at 1 p.m. at the Midland International Airport. "Our community has managed through this pandemic very well," said Jamie Chapman, Director of Medical and Surgery Services at Odessa Regional Medical Center. "The people of the Permian Basin are being more cautious, and our hospitals have not been overrun. As I am sure everyone is aware, other parts of the U.S. cannot say the same, and Boston is one of them. Boston has seen a 33% increase in the number of coronavirus cases over the course of 3 days, quickly overrunning area hospitals with patients. As a result, Steward Healthcare, owner of ORMC, sent out a request for volunteers within the Seward system to help with the rising demand for frontline providers in the area. However, this will not affect ORMC's ability to provide care to the patients in Odessa and the surrounding areas," a news release said. ORMC would like to invite the community to show support for these nurses with white ribbons that can be placed outside homes, put on car antennas, or pinned to clothing. Supporters are encouraged to share photos by tagging the hospital on social media platforms for these brave young women to see. "Our ORMC family could not be more proud of these nurses who have stepped in, put their lives and their families on hold to go to the front lines of our hospitals in Boston to help their fellow Steward employees through this crucial time," said Stacy Brown, president at Odessa Regional Medical Center. Stewart has nurses from other markets doing the same, which highlights one of the many values of being part of a large healthcare system. Those other facilities will be there for ORMC too, if and when we need their help. Kudos to these brave ORMC nurses. Obituary for Friday, April 10th. Sharon Wilson. A celebration of the life of Sharon Wilson, 76, of Lubbock, will be at 2 p.m. Saturday, April 11th, with Dr. Shara Atkinson officiating. Services will be private for immediate family, but all others are to share in this celebration on her tribute page at www.sandersfuneralhome.com. Her family will have a public celebration of her life at a later date. Sharon passed away April 7th. Darla Sharon was born August 10th, 1943, in Lubbock to Ernest and Ava Duckworth. She was preceded in death by her parents and a sister, Belle Duckworth. Survivors include her son Jason Wilson and wife Michelle, son Jeff Wilson and wife Marta, daughter Angela Hawkins, sister Trudy Gamble, three grandchildren, and her Gamble kids. Memorials are suggested to Meals on Wheels of Lubbock or the First United Methodist Church of Lubbock Treasured Times. Death Notice. Claudio Tercero. Claudio Tercero, 80, of Presidio, died Tuesday, April 7th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Tuesday, April 14th at St. Elizabeth Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.